If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to his friend, comedian John Mulaney, as well as Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts. Plus, they both answer a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
This week has revealed a lot about the Trump White House, from peddling conspiracy theories to attacking immigrants to defending an aide accused of domestic violence. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Donald Trump so badly wants to be a dictator, but no one seems to take him seriously. Maybe it's his name. Donald Trump just isn't a good dictator name. It sounds like the name of the chubby IT nerd who doesn't get the girl in a college comedy. You'll never guess who asked me out. Donald Trump. Still, this week has brought us one unnerving spectacle of authoritarianism after another, from the president calling Democrats treasonous for not applauding him to ordering the Pentagon to plan a military parade. In fact, Trump's request for a military parade is so crazy that even state TV outlet Fox News seems a little uncomfortable with it.
Jennifer, what has been the reaction at the Pentagon to the president's request?
Well, I would describe it, Dana, as a collective eye roll from military leaders who I've spoken to. Most thought it was a joke at first. Many fear that the U.S. will look like the dictators they scoff at around the world.
There are a lot of people at the Pentagon who would love to show off all the equipment.
Right.
And the personnel.
I don't know. It seems like a waste of money.
Wow. When you've lost Brian Kilmeade, you know you've gone off the deep end. That's like Thelma telling Louise she's just going to catch an Uber. But while they may be skeptical of Trump's plan for a military parade, Fox News and the rest of Trump's allies in the GOP have been helping him concoct a series of fake scandals to undermine the Russia investigation. Like, for example, the famous Nunes memo alleging wrongdoing by the FBI. The memo turned out to be a dud. But that didn't stop Trump from pretending they'd uncovered a massive scandal during a speech in Ohio on Monday.
Oh, but did we catch them in the act or what? You know what I'm talking about. Oh, did we catch them in the act? They are very embarrassed. They never thought they were going to get caught. We caught them. Hey, we caught them. Oh, it's so much fun. We're like the great sleuth.
I'm sorry. You are not a great sleuth. You might think you're Dick Tracy, but you're only half right. So Trump's allies in Congress and the right-wing media have been going all out to discredit the Russia probe. And yesterday, they latched onto yet another wild conspiracy theory when a text message from September 2016 emerged between former FBI officials who were having an affair, in which one wrote to the other, "POTUS wants to know everything we're doing." Now, Fox News tried to claim the text was a reference to President Obama meddling in the Hillary Clinton email investigation. But if you look at the timeline, that doesn't make any sense. In fact, it turns out the text was actually about Russian interference in the election, a topic any competent president would obviously want to be briefed on. Of course, if that text were sent now under Trump, it would read, POTUS doesn't want to know what we're doing. He threw a cheeseburger at me and screamed fake news. But as usual, the fact that this fake scandal was yet another dud did not deter Trump, who took to Twitter to scream in all caps, new FBI texts are bombshells. This keeps happening. Every time the right claims have discovered some major bombshell casting doubt on the Russia investigation, we get a little more context and it turns out to be BS. In fact, the same guy who brought us this fake tech scandal, GOP Senator Ron Johnson, also brought us a fake tech scandal a few weeks ago when he claimed to have found a reference to a so-called secret society in a text message sent by those same two FBI officials.
What this is all about is further evidence of corruption, more than bias, but corruption at the highest levels of the FBI and that secret society. We have an informant that's talking about a group that were holding secret meetings off-site. There's so much smoke here. There's so much suspicion.
Let's stop there. A secret society, the secret meetings off-site of the Justice Department.
Correct. That's,
and you have an informant saying that?
Yes.
Man, look at Bret Baier's face right now. That's the face you make when someone comes up to you on the subway and tells you Pizza Rat was a government mind control project.
He didn't want the pizza, man. They just made him think he wanted the pizza.
Now, when the full context of the message came out, it turned out it was just a joke, which anyone with any common sense could have told you. And Johnson was eventually forced to admit that the whole thing was probably a joke when he was tracked down by reporters in the Capitol.
Senator, this text message seems to be a comment about secret society was in jest. Do you agree that it appears to be it was in jest?
It's a real possibility.
Oh, is it? Is it a real possibility, Detective Johnson? Sorry to say this, but you're not exactly a...
great sleuth.
Now, while all of this is happening, Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation seems to be moving very quickly, and his team has made clear that they would like to interview Trump soon. But this week, Trump's lawyers have been telling him not to comply.
Lawyers for President Trump say he should not agree to sit down with Special Counsel Robert Mueller. That is according to the New York Times, saying, quote, lawyers are concerned that the president, who has a history of making false statements and contradicting himself, could be charged with lying to investigators.
Of course they are. Trump lies like a rug. And like his rug, he's not very good at it. The best thing that ever happened. No lawyer who has ever met Donald Trump would let him sit down for an interview under oath with Robert Mueller. In fact, I'm pretty sure one of the first questions on the bar exam is, would you let Trump talk under oath? And the only two choices are no and hell no. So you've got the president ordering military parades, calling his political opponents treasonous for not applauding him, and spreading conspiracy theories to undermine a federal investigation. And then there's the fact that Trump has been openly lying about immigration policy, and just 2 days ago called for a shutdown of his own government if Democrats refused to bend to his will. He was so adamant about it, he kept repeating the word shutdown over and over.
If we don't change it, let's have a shutdown. We'll do a shutdown, and it's worth it for our country. I'd love to see a shutdown if we don't get this stuff taken care of. If we have to shut it down because the Democrats don't want safety and unrelated but still related, they don't want to take care of our military, then shut it down. We'll go with another shutdown.
Why does he keep saying shutdown? Is that his safe word for when he's confused and bored in a meeting?
Well, this is all very interesting, but I was thinking we need a shutdown. Let's have a shutdown. Time for a shutdown.
Also, can we go back to this part real quick?
The Democrats don't want safety and unrelated but still related. They don't want to take care of our military.
Unrelated but still related. That sounds like how Trump would describe Eric.
This is my son. This is my son, Eric. Unrelated but sadly related.
Now, leaders in the Senate yesterday reached a deal to keep the government open, but that agreement did not include a fix for Dreamers, the young undocumented immigrants who were brought here as children, and whose lives were cruelly thrown into limbo when Trump ended the program. And to protest the fact that the deal doesn't include a solution for Dreamers, Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi took to the House floor yesterday and gave an unprecedented 8-hour floor speech. Now, Pelosi has become something of a target for Trump lately, who's been bragging he wants to make her his de facto opponent during the 2018 midterms. Trump even went out of his way to criticize Pelosi during his speech about the GOP tax cuts in Ohio.
Nancy Pelosi, what she's doing to this country, and she's gone so far left. I think this is not a good day for Nancy Pelosi. She's our secret weapon. Your paychecks are going way up. Your taxes are going way down. So Nancy Pelosi again said that's crumbs. Well, she's a rich woman who lives in a big, beautiful house.
So Trump seems to have trained his sights on Nancy Pelosi. I wonder what it is about Nancy Pelosi that seems to attract Trump's ire. I mean, Trump attacks a lot of people, but there's something in particular that really seems to anger him. I can't put my finger on it. It's really a mystery. Well, I don't know. I guess we'll never know. We'll just never know. But there's something. In fact, the Trump White House's misogyny and hostility towards women were once again on display this week when administration officials initially defended the White House staff secretary, Rob Porter, after he was accused by two ex-wives of domestic abuse. It was reported that senior White House officials were aware for months of the allegations. No action was taken to remove him from the staff, and after the allegations surfaced Tuesday, the White House strongly defended him. Now, the allegations against Porter were reported by two different publications and corroborated by photos and contemporary sources, but still, the Trump White House initially defended him. In fact, this is a White House that has repeatedly chosen the denials of men over the many corroborated stories of women, whether it's in the case of Roy Moore, Corey Lewandowski, or Trump himself.
At least 16 women accused the president of sexually harassing them throughout the course of the campaign. Last week, during a press conference in the Rose Garden, the president called these accusations fake news. Is the official White House position that that all of these women are lying?
Yeah, we've been clear on that from the beginning, and the president's spoken on it.
I can only say Corey's a fine person. I told him, I said, you should never settle this case. You should go all the way. I think they've really hurt a very good person.
Roy Moore denies it. That's all I can say. He denies it. And by the way, he totally denies it.
Trump sided with those guys, even though they look so guilty. Roy Moore is what Howdy Doody would look like if he checked into a rehab clinic. And Corey Lewandowski looks like he should be slowly rising out of a basket while music plays. Porter resigned yesterday, despite Kelly and other White House officials initially defending him. And in the wake of Porter's resignation, this photo of a group of key Trump aides from a July 2017 event has resurfaced. Look at that photo. Everyone in that photo has either resigned or been fired. Lewandowski, Omarosa, Anthony Scaramucci, Sebastian Gorka, and Porter. Even the car in the back has been fired. Melania kept trying to escape in it, so it had to go. So if you're in the photo, it means eventually you'll be fired. And I know it's cheating, and I don't know. Maybe this will work? There we go. This has been A Closer Look.
Ryan Reese, audience forum comedian for Late Night with Seth Meyers, here with Jake from Pennsylvania, who just came from a live taping. What'd you think?
I thought it was awesome. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this or like seen a taping. It was super cool seeing it from the inside, super high energy, very fun. I dug it.
What do you think of President Trump ordering the Pentagon to plan a military parade?
You know, I don't know. I think that it would be great to honor them every day of the year, maybe not once for a parade. You know, as for putting all the energy there, I think there are more problems that need to be settled first before we work on something that specific.
President Trump has said he'd love a government shutdown if Congress can't agree to change immigration. What do you think of this?
I think it's really unsettling to hear the leader of our country saying that he would love the government and the driving forces, you know, behind our country's political system to shut down. To be excited or to have like positive feelings towards a shutdown like that it's concerning. Like, why?
Thanks for joining us, Jake.
Our guest tonight is an Emmy Award-winning writer and comedian who's performing 7 sold-out shows next week at Radio City Music Hall as part of his Kid Gorgeous stand-up tour. He's also returning to co-host the Film Independent Spirit Awards alongside Nick Kroll March 3rd on IFC. Please welcome back to the show our very good friend, John Mulaney, everyone. How are you?
How are you? Nice to see you.
It's wonderful to see you as well. I'm very excited. I'm going to see you at Radio City. I want to get to that, but I'm very excited that you and Nick Kroll are hosting the Film Independent Spirit Awards again.
Yes,
on
that
IFC.
Is a wonderful evening. That is every year, the Film Independent Spirit Awards on IFC. We hosted it last year, and they're having us back.
It was so good last year. And you were, I should say, you were kind enough to, not only are you hosting that, you were kind enough to help write jokes for the Golden Globes when I hosted. Thank you so much for doing
you
that.
You did an excellent job hosting the Golden Globes.
Thank you. I could not have done it without your help.
That was so genuinely cool. That was such a not being hyperbolic, truly important night that went like beautifully, and you were the host of it.
Thank you.
It was very cool. It
was very nice to have your help, and I wanted to make sure.
Was it fun right before it?
No. you've said that because we've worked on things and we've hosted things. The thing that you think would be the most fun to host would be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Yes, that is the only truly fun award show.
Yeah.
I don't know if you all watch the HBO Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction annually. No? Okay, absolutely no one. It happens every year, or does it? I'm not sure. If it didn't, no one would notice. They induct about like a half dozen ungrateful bands into an association no one ever asked for in Cleveland. And if I could describe it, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony, think of it like a wedding if every speech was given by the bride's ex-boyfriend. Like, every band comes in with some old grievance, and all their speeches are just filled with bile from, like, 30 years before about, like, equipment vans or something. And, like, the Golden Globes, the Oscars had a big weird thing happen last year. That's one glitch. That's on a night where each winner does not know until the moment the envelope opens that they've won. Then they have to go give a speech in front of 10 million people. That should have millions of glitches. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction bands know for months that they're going to be inducted and that they have to give a speech. They blow it every year. They all get up there. They don't know how to stand. They've been standing on stage for 20 years and they're just like side to the podium like, yeah, I guess, you know. Look, if you're going to have a Hall of Fame, which we think is BS, they always undercut the night right away. And we're like, we don't want this. This was for you. And they have that energy of like, you know, in a movie when someone's like, I had a speech, but you know what? I'm going to speak from the heart. Except there's no paper and no original speech. You're just like, I didn't know for months what I was going to say, but I just thought of something. I should have gotten $400 more dollars for the Toledo date, and I'm really mad. And they're dressed like John Varvatos pirates. That little Steven look, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I like about little Steven? Is when he pulls out reading glasses. Like, have you noticed how, like, older rockers now have to pull out, like, Walgreens cheaters to read their speech? They're like, it's my honor to induct the Zombies into the Rock and Roll. It looks like a pirate Hall of Fame, except pirate Hall of Fame would be probably the most fun night ever, and the pirates would be super grateful.
Yeah.
None of these people are.
Are you excited about Radio City? Are you excited to play the hallowed stage of Radio City?
I'm so nervous, but I'm very excited.
Great.
I've barely been in there before, and it's like Radio City. It's like classic,
yeah,
old-fashioned-y thing.
There's something very old-fashioned about your tour poster, Kid Gorgeous. This is an excellent photo and an
Thank
excellent
you.
Look.
There were ones that were funny, and I picked one where I thought I looked good. And that's embarrassing, but that's what happened.
There's a Sinatra vibe to this. You saw Sinatra when you were 11 years old.
Yes, I did.
And
it
this was
my birthday present. My dad took me to see Frank Sinatra because I was a big Frank Sinatra fan.
Yeah, most 11-year-olds get taken to Sinatra, but you...
I don't even know if they do.
Yeah.
Not in 1993.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they're like, we're all going to Sinatra and you're going to like it. No one was going.
Where'd you see him?
At the Aurora Riverboat Casino in Aurora, Illinois, which was... they basically tied a boat and far enough away by rope that you could have legal gambling in the state of Illinois. It'd be, you know, the length of the roast on the chain and Jaws?
Yeah.
Those idiots with the roast? That's how far away the gambling boat was. But you could gamble, and it was a casino. And it's gone now. It didn't work. It was illegal. But I was a huge Frank Sinatra fan from, like, you know, 9, 10, 11. You know how kids are. And It's the coolest thing my dad ever did. For my 11th birthday, he took me to see Frank Sinatra. It was awesome. I was the youngest person there by about, I don't want to be silly, but about 110 years. Frank Sinatra walks out, as he does. They go, "Ladies and gentlemen, Francis Albert Sinatra." And people start clapping at Francis. You know, they know who it is, right?
Yeah.
So then he comes out and he introduces the orchestra and he goes, "This is my son, Frank Jr., conducting the band. I gave him a job so he wouldn't sit around the house smoking dope." And my dad went, "Ugh." And it was like, you know, it was a solid concert. It was about 54 minutes. And it was awesome. It was
great.
I liked all of that back then, though.
This is amazing. I did not, and I know you. I did not know this about you. The congressman, Seth Moulton, is coming out next.
Yes.
He's the congressman in Massachusetts' 6th congressional district, I believe.
The 6th congressional district, yes.
And we were texting because you said, "I can't believe he's on," because your great-grandfather was the congressman in that district.
Yes, and my great-uncle.
And this is the Bateses, and these are photos of your...
That's my great-grandfather, my grandmother's, my Nana's dad, George Bates, and that's her brother, William, a.k.a. Bill Bates. They served, and I'm sorry if I'm going to get it wrong, from the mid-40s until 1967.
That's crazy. A crazy coincidence, but then you reached out to your Nana today.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of your Nana.
Yes. You have a Marblehead connection.
Yes, your Nana and my mother from the same town in Massachusetts.
Yes, we've been through this before, but they were in the same charity musical review called Pills of Poppin'.
So there's a lot of coincidences. Yeah. But you reached out to your Nana to see if there's anything you wanted me to address to the congressman when he comes out next.
Yes, she had a few things.
Okay, great.
Let me see. What did she tell me to tell you? Be careful with his license plate. Her dad had a special license plate that everyone in the town of Salem, Massachusetts, yes, that one, knew because he was the congressman. And she once went to get pizza when it was new. This is a long time ago. Pizza was new to Boston area, and you could only get it at a bar. So she wanted to try pizza. So she parked the congressman's car outside of a bar. And it was a real scandal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Back then, that's what a scandal was. Because a young woman wanted pizza. She said, "Well, I know he just got married, but Seth doesn't need to bring that up because he knows that."
Okay.
So you don't need to tell him that he's married.
Okay.
She said he should know that his district was the first to be gerrymandered. And I said, "Yeah, I know. I'm with all of you." I said, "Jerry, no, gerrymandered is how it should be pronounced. Eldridge Gerry was," and I'm telling you, but I'm also just quoting her the whole time, so please don't think I'm just telling you this fact. He was the first governor of Massachusetts, and he was vice president under James Madison, and I hear that James Madison's wife did not like him. So that's town gossip still. And someone saw that the district had been carved into a strange way, and they said, "That looks like a salamander." And someone else said, "No, it's a gerrymander," because Eldridge Gerry had done it.
Wow.
I said, "You know, everyone, and I mean everyone, says gerrymandered." She said, "Everyone is wrong."
Well, once again, your Nana.
Nana a million, you zero.
Yeah, Nana brings the facts.
She also then said, I was talking around the phone today about it, you know, just getting the details. She goes, "When are you rehearsing this?" I said, "Well, it's 4 now, and I'll be there in a few hours, so we're never going to rehearse this." She goes, "You just go on television with this." I said, yeah. "You okay with that?" She goes, "Oh, I'm fine with it." Yes, she was very, very excited.
Well, I'm very excited to ask him all about this.
Now, sorry, real quick. Her brother and father were Republican congressmen.
Yeah.
The seat has gone back and forth, Republican and Democrat. My grandmother, with Republican family, has grown up Republican. I'm making far more efforts to explain it to all of you than she ever would. She would go, "I'm a Republican," and that'd be the end of it. She said, "I like him so much, I wish he'd come over to our side, and I'm here to welcome him." But then she said, "You know, I asked my father once, because all the other Irish Catholics, the Kennedys, everyone, they were all Democrats. I said, why aren't we Democrats? They seem to have more fun." And he said, they do have more fun, but legislation is not about having fun. It's serious business.
True.
That
words.
Was the end of the call. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Can't wait for your shows. Can't wait for the Film Spirit Awards. John Mulaney, Independent Spirit Awards, March 3rd on IFC.
Hey, this is Kevin from Late Night. We're here with John Mulaney. Hi, John.
Hi, Kevin. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for doing this podcast.
Thank you for having me. Of course. Thank you for hanging out with me. It's been too long.
Absolutely. You are, you've been on tour. There is something you were telling me that you had a problem crossing the Canadian border.
This was
weeks
the
ago.
Worst travel day of the tour in terms of logistics was the very second day of the tour, going from Portland, Maine to Halifax, Nova Scotia, which if you've never been is a socialist fishing village up in Nova Scotia. We couldn't fly there in time for the show. And if we drove, it was going to be 13 hours. So it was, there was no real way to get there and be there in time for the show, which is bad routing. But we figured out that we could leave at like 4 or 5 in the morning if someone else drove us, because then we wouldn't have to be exhausted. So we got like a party limo bus, like a bachelor party limo bus with like chasing lights to drive us from Portland, Maine to Halifax. We get out. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning. The driver's leaning against the car. And he goes, before you say anything, I know I look like Joe Biden. And we were like, whoa. Sir, we're still in like REM sleep. But thank you for pointing out the passing resemblance you have to former Vice President Joe Biden. Thanks for addressing that elephant in the room. We get in the car. We pass out. 4 or 5 hours later, dun, 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 we're at the Canadian border. And I hear the guy go, I got two comedians in this party bus and we're trying to get across the border. And they go, get out right now. And I feel bad because they searched the whole bus. I think they thought they were going to find fun showbiz things like drugs and guns and those pit bulls you're not allowed to have. Instead, it was just like all these creams for my winter skin, you know. So then they bring us up to ask us the questions. The guy goes, do you have any firearms on you? And I say, no. And he said, did you answer that question honestly? I said, yes. And then he said, do you have any livestock on you? And I said, no. And then he said, did you answer that question honestly? And I said, yes. And then I started double over laughing.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, my God, he's asking that because the only reason he would is if that second question hadn't worked once. It's definitely worked one time where some guy was coming through and he was like, I'll be fine as long as no one double checks. And then they're like, do you have any livestock? And he's like, no. And they're like, are you lying to us? I have a chicken. I'm so sorry. So then we were leaving the desk. We're almost done. The guy goes, do you have any alcohol or tobacco on you? And I said, no. And then he said, do you answer that question honestly? And then my opener, Max, he went, Oh my gosh, I have one cigarette. And the guy leaned in and he said, that's why we always ask. Perfect.
He gotcha.
He got us good. Yeah. Can you imagine treating people to your southern border that terribly?
Awful.
I can't.
Having been away from SNL and working with Seth for a few years now, I mean, you guys are still working together on Documentary Now and that sort of thing. But in our current state, are there days that you sort of wish that you were writing at SNL with some of the things that are happening
in the
world?
Oh, I think about it with the cast and how good they are and some side stories. But no, to be totally honest, no, not with Trump. I find nothing funny about this. I find it like such an exhausting gauntlet where a lot of people are able to point out what's funny, you know, like looking back on what Seth was able to do with, you know, people knew Sarah Palin was silly, but there was still an enormous spotlight on a certain take on her that the show was responsible for.
Yeah.
Downey, obviously the same. Those things were much more rewarding. Kind of sitting in a room and being like, what is the take? What is the take? And then having it really work. You know, didn't always happen. We had a lot of boring cold opens, too. A lot of John Huntsman cold opens. But to have it be so, like, white hot every week would be almost the opposite problem.
Having been there when, you know, Obama was president, and the criticism sometimes was like, oh, it's hard to make fun of him because he's so cool and hard to hook into, where now you have, it seems like the opposite thing now.
It was always more fun. I talked about this with Lauren once, that, like, until recently, Republicans were funnier to a degree. There's many exceptions. But, you know, McCain was super funny when he was on the show.
Right.
I'm talking about their contribution to the show. I'd say Palin came like pretty game. Like
You know, she came on knowing we'd been making fun of her. I think that since he's left office, former President George W. Bush has, you know, had Lauren down. There's some kind of like sense of humor with, and I'm just talking about certain individuals at a certain time. That's changed now. You know, I feel like, you know, it's not like, hey, we disagree with you, but you're such a good sport. Come and have fun. There's
right.
fewer and far between of those people.
Yeah. Congrats on the tour. You're sort of Thanks. Wrapping up. You're playing Radio City next week. That's super exciting.
Then there's dates in the spring, but the first big wave tour is over.
Congrats on hosting the awards again, the IFC.
Yeah, that was so
Film
fun.
Awards. Yeah.
That was really fun. I always liked doing the Creative Arts Emmys because it was in the day. And something about that was kind of fun. Like it had a looser atmosphere. And the Spirit Awards is in the day on the beach. And it feels fun. It feels loose. And we had a lot of fun. So I hope we bring it, but I also hope we have a good time.
Yeah. And you and Kroll back together again. It's always fun to see you two together. And Oh Hello on Broadway is
it
just one of my favorite
like
things, too.
Anyone problematic is coming. So that's good. We check the guest list almost constantly.
Thank you so much again for being here. And
thanks for having me.
And come back again soon.
When did you redesign the t-shirts?
I think that's the first I'm seeing of these. Like,
wow.
You might be one of the first
to get these.
That's
not the new logo. That's just some
new that's just on the right.
Yeah. I'm very excited to wear it. I wear them to the gym just in case people don't know that I'm involved with TV and media.
As you should.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mulaney.
Good to see you, Kevin.
Good to see you, too.
Our guest is a decorated veteran who serves Massachusetts 6th District as a United States Congressman. Please welcome to the show Congressman Seth Moulton, everyone. Welcome to the show. I really appreciate you being here.
It's great to be here, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Can you speak to this gerrymander versus gerrymander?
Sadly, that is something we discuss.
Okay,
it was the original gerrymander district, but his name is Gary.
It is Gary. Yeah. So you're going to back up Mulaney's Nana on this.
Yeah, and not only that, but, I mean, my dad grew up in the district. My parents started dating there in the 1960s. And you know who the first congressman that my parents met was?
Who was that?
It was me.
Oh, wow.
So not a very political family. Not a very political family.
So you served with distinction, won a couple of medals for your service, but you also were a local celebrity. You had a show, a television show in Iraq called Moulton and Muhammad.
Moulton and Muhammad with my translator, Muhammad. And, I mean, we were celebrities. I mean, I used to get fan mail. I used to have to sign autographs in the street. I mean, no one asked me for my autograph now as a member of Congress. So... this is a total step down in terms
and
of...
And so here are you and your translator. That's Muhammad there. So what was the show? Like, what did you guys... What was the goal of broadcasting in Iraq to people who had obviously never had non-state-controlled television?
Well, it was amazing because we actually believed in the Marine Corps that a free media was important to a democracy. Sort of a crazy concept.
Yeah.
But the first thing we had to do is we just had to get something on TV because all this TV station had ever done was play tapes from the Ministry of Information in Baghdad. So the first thing we did is we got a DVD player, hooked it up to a transmitter, and these Iraqis used to put in movies, American movies they would get from the market, and watch them for the first time while simultaneously broadcasting them to millions of Iraqis across the country. And the mistake we made is we forgot to explain the rating system.
Okay, gotcha.
So what would happen is they'd get to a racy section of an American film, and they'd quickly hit eject, and they had this 10-volume set of Islamic history videos that they would put in to sort of calm everybody down. But one night, they didn't switch quickly enough. The movie was Basic Instinct.
Oh, that's one you want to switch, yeah.
And so the next day, there were protests. I mean, men throwing rocks, women wailing in the streets. Muhammad, my translator, and I, just because we were sort of in charge of the TV station, we got death threats. At the end of a very long day, I turned to Muhammad and I said, let's go get tea with the Iraqi police, because these are guys in their 20s and 30s. Like, surely they wouldn't be so offended by what was on TV last night. And it was a great cultural lesson for me, because I walked into this room full of young Iraqi men, and they were immediately irate. They were yelling and screaming at me. And I turned to Muhammad and I said, Muhammad, what are they saying? And he said, sir, they say every time you put a movie on TV, you turn it off right when we get to the good part.
So a lot of similarities with 20-year-olds here in the States as well. One of the things you are hoping to do is recruit a new generation of people in public service that come from the military. The veterans can have great purpose here of serving in office. What is it about veterans that you think is important for our political system?
Well, look, I wouldn't be here if not for being a veteran. I mean, I didn't grow up interested in politics or anything like that. I was actually recruited by a nonprofit trying to get veterans to run for office at a time when we've never had fewer veterans in Congress in our nation's history than we do today. And when I decided to run, it was because the congressman in my home district, Congressman Bates' successor, he'd managed to pass one bill in 18 years. He was incredibly partisan. And I was like, look, if no one is willing to stand up to him, then this system is never going to change. So the problem was, I was so naive about politics, I didn't know that you're not supposed to take on an 18-year incumbent in your own party. And so the whole national Democratic establishment was against me. They said, you're going to lose. And by the way, you will never run for anything again in politics because you don't challenge the establishment. And fundamentally, what they were saying to me as a veteran was, do not participate in the democracy you risk your life to defend. And that's wrong.
And have you... So you had this interesting situation, which is now you're in this very partisan Washington, D.C., but the kind of your first political battle was against your own party. Do you feel like that puts you in a better situation to deal with all these different...
Look, the party establishment has gotten us into a terrible position right now. I mean, we don't control anything in Washington. And so I think it's time for a new generation of Democrats to step up and run. And the thing about veterans is they know how to challenge the establishment. They're not afraid to take on, you know, the people in control. They're not afraid to put people over politics or over their political party. And I've got 19 unbelievable candidates that I've endorsed and encouraged to run and everything. People like Mikey Sherrill right down in New Jersey, who's taking on the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. I mean, the chairman of the House Appropriations has more money flowing under his pen than any politician in the world. And she just scared him out of the race because she's such an incredible leader. She's a Navy helicopter pilot. She's killing it. She's going to win. And I think that, you know, the problem right now is we've got to look ourselves in the mirror as Democrats and recognize that we've lost. Like, you know, we stand for the right things, but we've lost a lot of elections. And unless we're willing to change, unless we're willing to make some difference, unless we're willing to stand up and talk about where we think we should take America, rather than just bashing the Republicans, let's talk about our vision for America. Let's talk about how we're going to tackle the economy and national defense. Like, let's talk about what we're going to do, not just what Trump is doing wrong.
I think one of the things Trump did, obviously, is he had these very bold policy proposals in the 2016 election. Now, whether or not any of them were rational, they were certainly bold. What are, do you think, in the next, not only 2018, but 2020, what are the bold policy proposals that Democrats need to take?
Look, one of the things we have to do is tackle the economy. And the reality is a lot of people in America are getting left out of the economy. And it's not because of what Trump says. It's not because immigrants are taking jobs. It's because they're being automated out of existence. I mean, literally, robots are taking jobs. So rather than take Trump's strategy of let's go back into the coal mines and pretend it's 1955, let's actually embrace a new economy and talk about how everybody in America, no matter where you live, has a meaningful role to play in the economy of the future. Let's talk about how we can actually expand healthcare access to everybody in America rather than quibble about how many people are going to lose health care. You know, let's talk about what a democratic vision of national defense is, where we build alliances across the globe and promote peace rather than try to start wars with North Korea. I mean,
that all sounds very good to me. I hope that everybody else wants to hear that message well. Thank you so much for making the time to come here.
Hey, thank you, Seth.
Thanks for taking care of Massachusetts 6. Congressman Seth Moulton, everybody.
Hi, this is Henry Melcher from Late Night. I'm here with Congressman Seth Moulton from Massachusetts. You were just talking with Seth about your military career. When you were in the military, is that when you made the decision that you wanted to run for office?
No, it's not. In fact, when I got out of the military, I moved to Dallas, Texas.
Right.
You know, which is not what you do if you want to run for office in Massachusetts.
No.
So this was definitely not on my radar screen. But when I was recruited by this nonprofit that said, you ought to step up and continue serving your country again, I thought back to the time I had in Iraq where I felt like I really saw some of the consequences of failed leadership in Washington. And there was actually a day in 2004 when a young Marine in my platoon said, you know, sir, you ought to run for Congress someday so that this doesn't happen again.
And I think
and he was right.
Yeah. Well, you said you want to replace the generation that sent people to Iraq with the people who served in Iraq.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think it's time for a new generation of leadership in the party, for the country, to really talk about where we want to take the country rather than just what the Republicans are doing wrong.
Right.
I think it's time for people to step up with vision. And I think that people who have served the country before know what it means to put the country first. And yes, I do think it's time for the generation that served in Iraq and Afghanistan to replace the generation that sent us there.
What do you do to build relationships, bipartisan relationships, that aren't the typical things that maybe we wouldn't know about from the outside? Because I think I've heard you talk about how you go to dinners, how the system around D.C. kind of sets parties up to not interact at all.
That's right. If you just follow the sort of daily schedule, you'd barely even see people from the other party. So many of the events, the meetings you do, they're all just divided by party. Even orientation, when we first showed up, was divided by party for most of it. It was unbelievable.
Can I pause you for a quick second? What's orientation like in
college? Oh, literally freshman orientation. And that's what they call it, and that's what
really?
It feels like.
Yes. What do you do?
I mean, you learn how to, you know, get your ID and how to, you know, where the cafeteria
amazing.
Is. And the rules to follow, the things not to do.
Right.
So it is an odd experience, but this is an institution that's just like a college, taking new people every few years.
Yeah.
But you really have to make an effort now to get to know people across the aisle and just develop personal relationships that in turn can become political relationships.
Oh, that's interesting. That when you have that connection, that really does go a long way in terms of...
It goes a long way. And that's one of the reasons why I find it easy to get along with veterans on the other side of the aisle, because we already have this shared experience.
Yeah.
And I think that helps when it comes to being able to trust someone on a piece of legislation where you each have to make some compromises to get it passed.
How do you continue to trust people on the far right that are kind of lockstep behind Trump, who you vehemently oppose?
I'll tell you what, it's hard because especially when you know them personally, and so many of them think that Trump is just abhorrent and disgusting, and yet they get on TV and say that he's a good guy. It makes you question their integrity.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that, you know, especially coming up as a Marine, when you go to Marine training, you can fail out of a run, you can fail a couple tests, they'll give you a second chance. But if you lie about anything, you're gone the next day. So integrity is fundamental when it comes to leading our country or leading our military. Obviously, our commander in chief has no integrity, but you start to question all the Republicans who are just blindly following him, too.
And what do you think is the reason behind that? Is behind them just blindly following when they'll tell you privately, he's crazy?
You know, people ask me a lot what's wrong with Washington. And sometimes I hear the question in terms of an issue, like, why doesn't Congress believe in climate change? And I've only been there for a couple years, but what I've noticed is that most of my colleagues are pretty smart. And I think that what's lacking in Washington isn't intelligence, it's courage. It's just the willingness to say what you know is the truth, even if it might be politically unpopular with your base.
Right. So you were recruited to run for Congress. Now you're recruiting more veterans and a younger generation to run for Congress. For anyone listening that's kind of thinking about running for Congress or for a state level or for a community board or for something smaller, what's your message to people who are kind of thinking about it but worried about the challenges that it presents?
You know, for all the problems in our country right now, our democracy still works. I mean, I'm a member of Congress who's still paying his college loans. As I said on the show, the first congressman my parents met was me, so I don't come from a political family. And yet, I was able to take on the establishment and ultimately win. And it just shows that we still have the best system of government on earth. So get involved. Take power back as the people of the United States, whether it's running for office or just marching in a march, volunteering for a campaign. Political activism matters now more than ever. So get out there and do it.
Yeah. There is so much political pressure on the system right now, especially from the left. Do you guys feel that in Congress? What's the impact of all that kind of activism on you guys?
I think it's great. I think it gives us energy and inspiration. And, you know, a lot of people question, well, is the Democratic Party shifting to the left or to the right? The reality is that if the Democratic Party wants to start winning again, we've got to have a big tent. And we've got to embrace these ideas from the far left, but we've also got to embrace candidates who are more in the middle and can help us take back the House and the Senate.
Yeah. Are you optimistic about the Democrats' chances in 2018?
I am, especially because we have this incredible number of service veterans who are running in these key swing districts to take back the House. But here's the thing. We can't rest on our laurels. Democrats still need to look ourselves in the mirror and recognize that we've lost. We've lost elections up and down the ticket. And I don't think we can start winning again until we start leading again. And we've got to recognize that we've got to paint a vision for the future, not just complain about Republicans, but tell Americans where we're going to take the country. If we do that,
we can take back Washington and bring some sanity back to American government.
Congressman, thank you so much for being here. It's such a pleasure meeting you. And good luck with the budget shutdown, which I know you're heading back to right away.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It was such a pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.